iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeart Radio app.
In retrospect, revisit pop culture moments from the 80s and 90s and try to understand what it taught us about the world and a woman's place in it. Crying in public. Two 20-something college women living in NYC dive into growing up at a time when there was no distinction between what's public and what's private. Best of Both Worlds. A discussion on work-life balance, career development, parenting, time management, productivity, and making time for fun.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons. A Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power. Protection exchanged for cash and flesh. This is Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South. And I am your host and lifelong wayward woman, Dr. Lindsay Byron. Listen to Hooker Gay, Criminals and Libertines in the South on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Martha Stewart, and we're back with a new season of my podcast. This season will be even more revealing and more personal, with more entrepreneurs, more live events, and more questions from you. I'm talking to my cosmetic dermatologist, Dr. Dan Belkin, about the secrets behind my skincare. Encore Jane about creating a billion-dollar startup. Walter Isaacson about the geniuses who changed the world. Listen and subscribe to the Martha Stewart Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the evening of March 30th, 2005, 32-year-old Katina Curley went to her house in East New Orleans. She and her husband, Reynaldo, had recently separated, and she was staying with her mother. But she stopped in every night to help feed her four kids, make sure their homework was done, and get them ready for bed. Reynaldo had some visitors in the house, which irritated Katina, and she and Reynaldo got into a heated argument. This wasn't unusual. Their relationship had been volatile from the start.
To be honest with you, it didn't take long to escalate. We started with the arguments, and then from the arguments, it turned into a fight.
Reynaldo and Katina went up to the bedroom, where their children could hear them arguing loudly. Moments later, Reynaldo rushed downstairs, followed by Katina, and suddenly a gunshot rang out.
And I used to always tell them, we don't need no gun in a home. I never liked guns. You know, guns are dangerous, and He just was adamant to have it there.
When police arrived, they found Reynaldo dead from a single gunshot wound to the heart. Katina was arrested that night and charged with second-degree murder.
I'm Katina Curley, and I was wrongfully convicted for 11 and a half years.
From Lava for Good, this is Wrongful Conviction with Mackie Freeling. Today, Katina Curley. Katina Curley was born in 1972.
I was born here in Louisiana, New Orleans. My mom is Sheila and my dad is Ernest. But my grandparents raised me since birth.
How come?
Because I guess at the time they figured that my parents was too young to raise me.
How old were your parents when they had you?
15.
Oh, wow. So they were kids.
Yeah, they was young. They was real young.
What was that like to grow up with your grandparents as an only child?
It was fun. I had everything. I was one of the spoiled ones. You know, I had everything that I wanted as a child. And growing up, you know, I had all the love and support that any child can ever ask for. You know, we used to go to Mardi Gras. She used to take me to a lot of parades. I used to go to a lot of parties with my cousin's sleepovers and things like that. My one favorite with me, my grandmother used to always like to eat ice cream when it's cold. She says it's better to eat ice cream when it's cold. So I used to sit on the sofa freezing to death trying to hang out with her, you know, just eating ice cream on the sofa looking at movies.
When Katina was 16, she had her first child, Devlin, with a high school boyfriend. A couple years later, her daughter, Brittany, was born. And then when Katina was 19, she met Reynaldo Curley. He was 17.
I met him through a friend. One of my good friends was dating Reynaldo's uncle. And I was over there one day and he came there with his uncle. And that's how I met him.
What struck you about him? Why did you like him?
I liked him because he was always well-groomed, and he used to dress nice, smell real good.
What did he dress like? I mean, this was early.
That was 92.
Okay, so what, I guess for younger listeners, like,
there's like a hip-hop, you know, like jeans, t-shirt, clean tennis, and, you know, he knew how to cut hair, so he was always well-groomed. And at the time, you know, he was, to me, he was nice, polite. You know, that's how they come off all the time when you first meet them.
But not long into their relationship, Katina began to see another side of Reynaldo.
We started getting into it like probably not even a month in us dating.
What kinds of things would you fight about?
We would fight about, he was like, when we first got together, he was the type that came off as, you know, if you for him, you for him. It was like always a jealous type. If I want to go home, he didn't want me to go home. To be honest with you, it didn't take long to escalate. We started with the arguments, and then from the arguments, it turned into a fight.
Like a physical.
Yeah, it really got physical fast.
And what did that look like? Did he physically hit you, or was it like throwing things? Like,
no,
what did
it is physically hit me, like physically. We used to fight.
What did you think when that happened?
At the time, I didn't know nothing about domestic violence. Or, you know, I didn't think, oh, this was abuse. I'm thinking, we just fighting. You know, it's my boyfriend. We fighting. You know, I saw fights before as growing up as a child. So I'm thinking, this is what it is in a relationship.
That's kind of what you were seeing around you. It just seemed kind of just normal.
It's a norm, like the norm.
In June of 1995, Katina and Reynaldo got married. Reynaldo had a son, also named Reynaldo, from a previous girlfriend, and Katina had Devlin and Brittany. Over the next few years, they added to their blended family with a son and a daughter, Devin and April.
Was he a good dad?
Yeah, he was a good dad. I can't take that away from him. You know, he was a good dad. The boys used to catch whippings, but yeah, he was a good dad.
But for Katina, the pattern of abuse continued over the years. Their arguments would turn into fights and then into physical violence. Katina later testified to being beaten by Reynaldo on numerous occasions, sometimes in front of their children. She suffered bruises, a broken nose, and once Reynaldo kicked her hard enough to dislocate her shoulder.
You know, I love Reynaldo, and I wanted to stick it out. I really did. But some days I just felt so disgusted and was depressed and down. And I just lost myself. And it was breaking me down. And I didn't even know that it was breaking me down because I couldn't even find my way no more.
Katina reported the abuse to police multiple times over the years. At one point, she says, her grandmother tried to step in and warn her.
My grandmother, that was my best friend. She knew everything. And the last incident before she passed in 03, that's when he broke my nose. And I went over there and she looked at me and I grabbed the doorknob and she said, T. And I looked back at her. She said, baby, you have to get out. She said, somebody's going to get hurt. And I didn't say anything. I just walked out the door.
How did your children react to the abuse? Did they see it?
They used to hear it because they was in a home with us. And I used to always like, you know, tell them to go in a room or whatever. But if we fought like that night in their sleep, they used to see my face the next morning. You know, what could I tell my kids?
Were you afraid for them?
As far as him abusing them? No. I wasn't afraid for them. What I was afraid for is them seeing me get abused and they thinking it's okay. That's when it's time to exit. No matter what.
My father was a good father and my mother was a good mother, but they just had their own issues.
This is April Curley, Katina and Reynaldo's youngest daughter.
My mom is very sweet. Everybody loves her. All my friends love her. When I was younger, she used to take me and my siblings skating, especially on the weekends. So we all know how to skate.
What do you remember about your parents' relationship?
my parents' relationship. It was good when it was good, and when it was bad, it was bad. As far as the fighting, the me waking up in the middle of the night trying to protect my mom, it was a lot. I saw a lot of the fightings. Like, any little thing will wake me up. So if the arguments start, I know to get up. Like, I know it's going to go farther.
The only one wasn't really scared to come in the room was my baby. That was April. She used to always come check on me, always.
From a very young age, April instinctively felt that she had to protect her mother.
I know maybe if I come in, maybe it will stop. Like, my brothers and my sister probably still stay asleep or stay in a room. But me, I was always the little warrior. I was brave. I wasn't scared. I just feel like if I was to help her, it would stop. And nobody else was able to stop it at that moment but me. I go over there and be like, stop hitting her. I pull him off her. I tell him stop fussing. But usually if he see me, it would stop. He'll diffuse the problem and he'll leave. Or I just tell her, come on, get your keys and let's go. And I try to leave with her, something like that.
So you did exit.
Yeah, at one, I exit a lot of times, to be honest with you. I exit a lot of times. But he always found me and find a way to persuade me to come back home. It's like, I love you. We have a baby. We have a family. You know, we're going to work it out and it's not going to happen. It's the same thing over and over and over again. And then he got to the point where saying, nobody not going to love you like me. And you have four kids and who going to take you with these kids and all. And that's something that I thought about a lot. Like, who are going to take me with these four kids? You know, how do I start all over?
Were you working at that time?
He didn't want me to work. I had a good bit of jobs, but he used to always make me quit.
Eventually, Katina started a job at Walmart, and she liked it, and she wanted to keep it.
This particular job, I told him, I said, whatever happens, just going to happen, because I've been trying to get on here, and I'm going to work this job. I want to work. I was tired of staying home. I was tired of being bored, being a housewife, cleaning, cooking, you know, the norm. And I just wanted to get out and, you know, make my own money. I wanted my own money. I needed to find me again. And, you know, as the months went by, I guess he just dealt with it. I was working at Walmart for like almost 3 years before this incident happened.
In March of 2005, when Katina was 32 years old, she left Reynaldo yet again.
You know, the reason why I left is so we wouldn't get into another fight. You know, I thought it was just going to be a few days, but the few days turned into a week. The week turned into like another week.
Katina was staying with her mother during this time while the children stayed at the house with Reynaldo.
I used to go home, make sure they ate, make sure my, you know, Brittany got April together as far as she took a bath, got her hair combed, stuff like that. I used to make sure they were straight, and then I leave.
So how long were you separated before the incident?
Just like probably almost 2 weeks. I'm going to say 2 weeks at the most.
And did you feel like this was going to be maybe the final time? Like, was this...
I wanted to be the final time. I wanted it to be the final time. But I didn't want it to be the final time like this.
You're listening to Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons. A Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power. Protection exchanged for cash and flesh. This is Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South. And I am your host, Dr. Lindsay Byron. 3 years ago, I came across a goldmine of news clippings detailing a scandal that rocked my small southern hometown. As I flipped through each page, this forgotten story came back to life.
I was told that it was just supposed to be a massage parlor.
The big shot in Davo was Barker.
He beats me continuously.
If you print anything that you hear in the grand jury, you will be put in jail.
I never gave any massages.
Listen to Hooker Gay, Criminals and Libertines in the South on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update, this week on your free iHeartRadio app.
In retrospect, revisit pop culture moments from the 80s and 90s and try to understand what it taught us about the world and a woman's place in it. Crying in public, two 20-something college women living in NYC dive into growing up at a time when there was no distinction between what's public and what's private. Best of Both Worlds, a discussion on work-life balance, career development, parenting, time management, productivity, and making time for fun.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Martha Stewart, and we're back with a new season of my podcast. This season will be even more revealing and more personal, with more entrepreneurs, more trailblazers, more live events, more Martha, and more questions from you. I'm talking to my cosmetic dermatologist, Dr. Dan Belkin, about the secrets behind my skincare. Walter Isaacson about the geniuses who changed the world. Encore Jane about creating a billion-dollar startup. Dr. Eliza Pressman about the five basic strategies to help parents raise good humans. Florence Fabricant about the authenticity in the world of food writing. Be sure to tune in to season two of the Martha Stewart Podcast. Listen and subscribe to the Martha Stewart Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On March 30th, 2005, police were called to the Curley residence on Bass Street in the Littlewoods area of East New Orleans. There, they found the body of 29-year-old Reynaldo Curley. He had been shot through the heart and was dead. A .38-caliber revolver was on the table nearby.
Okay, there is a lot of different versions of what happened.
This is Katina's post-conviction attorney, Majida Sneed.
I'm an attorney and law professor at Loyola Law School in New Orleans. So the shorter version, which I think everybody agrees on, is that Katina and Reynaldo were separated at the time of this incident. So Katina would come over and parenting things would happen, but she would not sleep there.
So do you remember what started the argument that day?
What started the argument was they had someone in the house that wasn't supposed to be there. That was my home. No matter what, that was me and my children's home. You know, that was that's my family. So why are you here? To me, that's a form of disrespect.
A neighbor, Deidre Andrews, later testified at trial that she had come over to the house to help Reynaldo get the children ready for bed. Reynaldo's cousin, Chico, was also there at the time.
So I asked them to leave, and that's how the argument started.
Reynaldo did not appreciate her coming in and asking them to leave, and so she proceeds to the upstairs bedroom. He follows her. There is a confrontation. Whether the confrontation was physical, whether it was just verbal, there's allegations that he choked her. There's allegations that he threw a Coke can at her. Whatever happened in that bedroom, they were the only two in the bedroom. And at some point, he goes back downstairs. She grabs his gun and goes downstairs in her mind to leave the residence, but knowing from a historical standpoint that he may attempt to stop her, she armed herself.
Where did the gun come from?
Well, actually, that was his gun. That was his gun. And I used to always ask him, you know, tell him, we don't need no gun in the home. I never liked guns. You know, guns are dangerous. And He just was adamant to have it there.
Would he ever pull it out during arguments?
Yeah, it was pulled out on me before. Wow. It was pulled out on me before.
I remember my mom come home to come check on us. I know I just got done taking a bath, and I did eat. So she was coming to
check on me and my sister, make sure we did our homework, her usual, you know, routine.
April was 8 years old. She and three of her siblings were home at the time, Reynaldo and Brittany, who were both 12, and Devin, who was 10.
Soon as I hear the screaming or the fussing, I'm automatically, you know, going downstairs or wherever they at, that's where I'm going, because I know it's going to escalate to something farther. So when I heard her, you know, ask them to leave, and they didn't leave, and my dad got angry and was like, you know, this is his house too, and I already know it was going to be something beyond that.
Do you remember hearing the gun?
Yeah, of course. I was in the stairway, so yes, I do.
Did you see your dad? Did you see this happen?
Yeah, actually, I saw everything. I remember him standing a while before he fell down to the ground. I remember my mom screaming his name, shaking, crying, and I remember a lot of people just bum rushing into the house.
The police come, she's arrested, and they then begin their investigation about whether or not this was a justifiable shooting or not.
So in all of the versions, does everyone agree that Katina was the shooter?
Oh, yes. She acknowledges she was the shooter. The police ultimately determined that it was not justifiable. Turn it over to the DA, who also agreed that it was not justifiable. And so that's how we get to her actually being charged with second-degree murder and going through a trial.
Afterwards, before you were arrested, what do you remember having any thoughts? Were you like, what just happened?
Ma'am, I was numb. I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
I was like, I was just there. Like, I didn't have a brain or nothing in my head, because I just couldn't believe it. What is going on?
That day is a blur. You know, you go through, there are moments where, yes, I know this, 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 and this. And at some point, there, your body shuts down. Your mind shuts down. There are moments in that, you know, in seconds where you're not really sure other than fear. You could talk about fear, but details. Why am I fearful? How did I move? Which way did I turn? When did I actually pull the trigger? Did I actually pull the trigger? Those details, it is common not to be able to answer those questions with any precision.
When I got to the police station, you know, they gave me water. They was asking me, kept asking me, was I okay? And then they finally told me, you know, I need to tell them what happened or whatever. And I started talking and explaining. And to be honest with you, I don't even know if I was explaining it right, ma'am. I was just that messed up. I don't even know if I was even explaining myself right.
Did you have a lawyer with you?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Did you know you could?
Yeah, they told me I could. I heard them and I didn't hear them. It's like you hear, you don't hear.
On August 4th, 2005, Katina was indicted on a charge of second-degree murder. Her plea at the time was not guilty by reason of insanity. This would require that Katina prove at the time of the shooting she didn't know right from wrong. 2 days before trial, her defense attorney, John Fuller, changed her plea to not guilty based on self-defense and withdrew the insanity plea.
Had he kept that in, he could have then introduced expert testimony on the issue of battered women.
So would battered women syndrome have been a common defense back then, almost 20 years ago, I guess? Is that something that we talked about?
We talked about it, but it wasn't so much utilized in domestic violence cases. There was a movie, The Burning Bed. Farrah Fawcett played a battered woman. Okay. And I'm going to think it came out in the 70s or 80s. But that was the first time that we actually heard about a woman being justified in fighting back to the point of death. What battered women syndrome talks about is a response to stimuli when you have suffered from trauma. So, for instance, you hear about post-traumatic stress syndrome with veterans. Someone who suffers from that, there's usually a trigger that sets that in motion. And so the same with battered women. Something happens that sets in motion what happens to you physiologically and psychologically that you react in a certain way. So it's not you walking down the street and all of a sudden you say, oh my goodness, I'm hearing these voices and I'm gonna just, you know, go off. There's the triggers. And in battered women syndrome, it's usually the trigger from the aggressor. The uniqueness of this case was the issue of whether or not in the moment that the incident occurred, whether the person felt threatened. When you have a situation where someone is being physically abused in the moment and the victim reacts and kills the aggressor, a jury could look at that and say, yes, in the moment she felt her life was in danger or she was in fear of great bodily harm. However, when you have a situation where the jury doesn't see in the moment she was being choked or beaten on, then you need that expert testimony to expound on what the victim is experiencing from a psychological standpoint, from a physiological standpoint. And we did not have it in this case.
Katina's trial began in February of 2007.
The defense put on a lot of information and a lot of evidence regarding history of abuse in the relationship between Katina and Rinaldo. He put on a case of police reports, medical evidence, the testimony of her supervisor who talked about her coming to work with bruises and a broken nose. Just a history of abuse that was documented. And so the jury was well aware of that history.
It was a sad day for both families, you know, for my side and also his side. It was sad. And what hurted me the most is that the children had to get up there to testify, you know?
What was that like to see that?
That was heartbreaking. It really was. It was heartbreaking because at some moment they broke down. You know, their dad is deceased and their mom about to go to jail. They're looking at my mom is on trial. You know, they're not going to have either one of their parents. So it was really heartbreaking. It was sad.
April was just 10 years old when she testified at her mother's trial.
Like I said, I was brave. So at the time, I was ready, but I am very like emotional. I try to be strong the best I could, but when I break down, I break down.
Were a lot of the questions about like what you saw in the home and their relationship?
Yeah, it was like, did I witness abuse? When was the time that I witnessed abuse? How many times have I witnessed the abuse? Yeah, it was a lot of questions.
Brittany and Devin also testified that they'd seen their father be physically violent with Katina on previous occasions. But Reynaldo's oldest son, Reynaldo, said something different.
He refuted that there was abuse, a history of abuse. So there was, you know, there was... I truly believe the jury narrowed their focus to that moment, to what was happening in the seconds before Rinaldo was shot. And because there was no evidence in the seconds before he was shot that he was physically confronting her in any way, that was enough for them to say she wasn't justified in her action.
On March 3rd, 2007, Katina was convicted of second-degree murder by a vote of 11 to 1. She was sentenced to life in prison without parole.
I would never thought in a million years that I'd ever be in prison and for murder. I'd never been incarcerated and, like, reality had hit. Like, I'm really in prison. I had a life sentence over my head, so I had nothing but time. You know, to think
what could have happened different if I would have just left and stayed, you know, this, you know, what it could have been me, you know, it could have been me that been dead and away from my kids. You know, some people be content. I wasn't. I always say, I'm getting out, you know, I'm going home. I know since day one when I stepped foot in, it was sad, it was scary, it was depressing, but I never, ever once accepted that life sentence. I never accepted it.
What was trying to parent and be a mom and be there for your kids like from behind bars?
Hard. It was hard because you only get 15 minutes on the phone, so you have to keep calling. And then they'll come see me. I used to come in the morning and leave, you know, at a certain time. But, you know, to me, that was our time to bond and talk, play games together and stuff like that. And it was, it felt so good just to be with them in that moment. But when they left, it was so hard. It was so, so hard.
I think my mom tried her best. It just wasn't enough time, you know? But we always wrote each other. We always talked. And it didn't matter if it was the weekend, if she had to stay up late. Like, we always had our conversation. And if we didn't have a conversation, I had a letter in the mail. So me and my mom are really, really, really close. It was hard because I did live with my grandmother, which is my mom's mom. I mean, I was loved. I was taken care of, but it just wasn't the same.
Yeah. What is bringing up all the emotions right now?
It's just a trigger for me. It's flashbacks. It's memories. It's something you can never forget. I don't care how much therapy, how much talking. When you live so much trauma, it's nothing that could take that away. No amount of happiness will take away what I went through.
You know, my oldest son told me one time when he came, you know, he put his head, because he, like, mild man, he quiet. And I said, something wrong, D, what's going on with you? And he looked at me, he said, "Man, we ain't have a good Christmas since you left." And you know how bad I felt? You know how, oh my God, that really kept me going. My children, my family, my friend, they really, I had so much support and so much love. And my children, I know I had to fight for my kids to get out.
Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons. A Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power. Protection exchanged for cash and flesh. This is Hooker Game, Criminals and Libertines in the South. And I am your host, Dr. Lindsay Byron. 3 years ago, I came across a goldmine of news clippings detailing a scandal that rocked my small southern hometown. As I flipped through each page, this forgotten story came back to life.
I was told that it was just supposed to be a massage parlor.
The big shot in Danville was Barker.
He beats me continuously.
If you print anything that you hear in the grand jury, you will be put in jail.
I never gave any massages.
Listen to Hooker Gay, Criminals and Libertines in the South on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update, this week on your free iHeartRadio app.
In retrospect, revisit pop culture moments from the 80s and 90s and try to understand what it taught us about the world and a woman's place in it. Crying in public. Two 20-something college women living in NYC dive into growing up at a time when there was no distinction between what's public and what's private. Best of Both Worlds, a discussion on work-life balance, career development, parenting, time management, productivity, and making time for fun.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Martha Stewart, and we're back with a new season of my podcast. This season will be even more revealing and more personal, with more entrepreneurs, more trailblazers, more live events, more Martha, and more questions from you. I'm talking to my cosmetic dermatologist, Dr. Dan Belkin, about the secrets behind my skincare. Walter Isaacson about the geniuses who changed the world. Encore Jane, about creating a billion-dollar startup. Dr. Aliza Pressman, about the 5 basic strategies to help parents raise good humans. Florence Fabricant, about the authenticity in the world of food writing. Be sure to tune in to Season 2 of the Martha Stewart Podcast. Listen and subscribe to the Martha Stewart Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Katina's initial appeal to her conviction was denied. She then filed for post-conviction relief, arguing ineffective assistance of counsel. They argued that her attorney had withdrawn the insanity defense without consulting her, and that he had failed to educate the jury on the effects of battered women syndrome.
So what the Supreme Court ultimately determined was that an expert in the area of battered women syndrome should have been called. Yes, there was ineffective assistance because the trial counsel admittedly says, I never thought about having an expert. I wasn't well versed in the issues of battered women syndrome. I thought the facts of the case alone, with the history of abuse for almost a decade, would be sufficient. And so I did not even consult an expert.
On June 27th, 2018, the Louisiana Supreme Court determined that the jury at the original trial should have had the benefit of expert testimony. And on the basis of ineffective counsel, the conviction was reversed, and Katina was granted a new trial. 2 days later, she was released on bond.
When I found out the day that I was going home, it was in 2018. It was in June. I'll never forget.
Katina was told to get dressed and go to the prison office, but she had no idea why. When she got there, she was surprised to see her attorney, Paul Barker.
I'm like, what he doing here? And he looked and he just held the envelope, envelope up. And he was like, you're going home. And I hollered from the Lord, have mercy. Oh, that was a good feeling. I jumped in that man's arms like I was a baby. It was really a good feeling.
When she came home, we just did everything that we used to do. We went skating, you know, we went bowling as a family. And that was just like me and her. It was like me, her, and my brothers and sisters. Like, we stuck together.
And then coming home to that, they was trying to figure out, you know, who was going to take the case, you know, who was going to try it or whatever. And that's when I met Miss Nee.
Katina's retrial began on February 26th, 2019, in Orleans Parish Criminal Court, before Judge Arthur Hunter Jr. This time, there was no jury. Judge Hunter would be the one to decide her fate.
So how did you feel at your second trial? Did you feel confident?
Oh, yeah, I was very confident. I was nervous, don't get me wrong, because, I mean, it's a trial. It's another trial. But I was confident in, you know, this second trial.
But they could have ruled to send you back.
Yeah, they could have ruled to send me back. But I was more confident because we had more evidence. We had more pieces, like, you know, the experts coming in. So that's what made me more confident, you know, for them to explain, you know, what I went through all those years.
At the retrial, Katina's defense team presented testimony from Beth Meeks, a domestic violence expert, and forensic psychologist Catherine Lawing.
And so between the testing that was done by the psychologist and the expert in bad woman syndrome in general, we were able to show what Ms. Curley was experiencing in that moment. There was justification for the fear, for the reaction. And based on that testimony, not just from the experts, but also from the lay witnesses, when you talk about a justifiable defense, that's an affirmative defense. And once you put on an affirmative defense, the state has an obligation to come back and rebut that. And the state was unable to do so.
Judge Hunter agreed with the defense's argument. On March 1st, 2019, Katina was acquitted of the murder charge.
That's another moment that I never forget. When they found me not guilty, I was so excited. Just knowing I can go home with my kids, now I can breathe better. And it was just such a blessing just to be back with my family and my kids, just to talk on the phone. And my son called me so much. Oh my God, all in the middle. Devin, he like a little sensitive. He's like the little baby. He called your mom. What, Devin? I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, nothing. I just want to hear your voice. He said, it feels so good just to pick up the phone to call you. But it's beautiful being out with my kids. And I have grandkids. I have, what, 8 of them. So they was kind of busy when I was locked up.
My mother is a strong Black woman, and I think she deserved everything that she worked for. Everything that she didn't get, I feel like she deserved it. I feel like it's her turn to live. I think it's time for her, you know, just to, you know, sit back and just enjoy herself, enjoy her life, not to worry so much, just be happy.
But even though she's out of prison, Katina still thinks about the many women who are there because they were victims of domestic violence, just like her.
They have a good bit of women in there for self-defense. And I hear that they're using my case to get a lot of women out of prison. And they have some that got out of prison because of my case.
How does that feel?
It feels good. It feels good to help other people, other women, you know, that's going through the same thing I'm going through. As far as like domestic violence, I would like to go talk to like different schools and go to different functions to talk to like lawyers, doctors, police. You know, a lot of people don't know about domestic violence. You know, they hear about it, but they really don't. They probably be just like me at one point, just thinking we just fighting. But it's not okay. No matter how you look at it or no matter how much you feel like things will change, when it becomes physical, it will turn out bad.
If you are experiencing domestic violence, help is available. Call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE or text START to 88788. Those numbers will be available in our episode description. Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. Please support your local innocence organizations and go to the links in the episode description to see how you can help. I'd like to thank our executive producers, Jason Flom, Jeff Kempler, and Kevin Wordis, as well as senior producer Annie Chelsea, producer Kathleen Fink, story editor Hannah Beal, and researcher Shelby Sorrells. Mixing and sound design are by Jackie Pauly, with additional production by Jeff Clyburn and Connor Hall. The music in this production is by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on all platforms at Maggie Freeling. Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling is a production of Lava for Good podcasts in association with Signal Company Number 1.
iHeart Podcast Update, this week on your free iHeartRadio app.
In retrospect, revisit pop culture moments from the 80s and 90s and try to understand what it taught us about the world and a woman's place in it. Crying in public. 2 20-something college women living in NYC dive into growing up at a time when there was no distinction between what's public and what's private. Best of Both Worlds, a discussion on work-life balance, career development, parenting, time management, productivity, and making time for fun.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Truck stop brothels run by a web of ex-cons. A Commonwealth attorney wasted on whiskey and power. Protection exchanged for cash and flesh. This is Hooker Gate, Criminals and Libertines in the South. And I am your host and lifelong wayward woman, Dr. Lindsay Byron. Listen to Hooker Gate, Criminals and Libertines in the South on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Martha Stewart, and we're back with a new season of my podcast. This season will be even more revealing and more personal, with more entrepreneurs, more live events, and more questions from you. I'm talking to my cosmetic dermatologist, Dr. Dan Belkin, about the secrets behind my skincare. Encore Jane about creating a billion-dollar startup. Walter Isaacson about the geniuses who changed the world. Listen and subscribe to the Martha Stewart podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.